Hello and welcome to The Eternal Debate. I'm Rachel Carline. And you are?
No, I am here.
Oh my God. What are you doing?
It's me. I was under the table.
And that's obviously...
I think I was sorting a lead. I'm always looking for a lead. Rachel, you're my lead. Come on, lead.
Right, and we've got
back. It's another episode. was that a sigh of excitement, a sigh of disbelief, or a sigh of absolute
It was
horror?
A sigh of that we're not even a minute in and you're winding me up.
Why did you all?
So we've got no producer, Si, watching over us.
Is he watching football?
I don't know what he's
doing. Is it because it's later than normal and he wouldn't shift out of his normal routine?
I don't know, but what it does mean, Andy,
I don't like this remote podcasting.
I know, me neither.
I'm not in control.
It's not.
I can't even hear myself, meaning I can hear myself, but I can't hear myself on a delay. And hearing myself on a delay gives me confidence.
Is that your disclaimer?
Because it's like it's not me.
Yeah.
But now I just sound normal. It's like I'm a Marvel character whose energy's gone. Special powers have gone.
Really dramatic. So anyway,
that's how it feels.
Right, so I'm conscious that I'm the timekeeper today. And we're now almost 2 minutes in and we've not
I'm
even said
red
what
wine
we're doing.
As well.
So.
But it's a Sunday evening, I'm allowed.
This episode, so we are going to be doing what we aim to be a trilogy of chemicals used in embalming. Now, the first episode...
Trilogy, that's three, folks.
The first episode, which is tonight.
Does that mean trilogy? Is that the study of three? Because anything... ology, trilogy, ology, it means study of, doesn't it? Biology, study of life.
Right, so I'm just going to ignore you now. I'm just going to carry on. So the trilogy is...
I'm always ignored.
You're putting me off.
What do I need to say?
You're what we need to say.
Come on, carry on. They get it. It's a trilogy. Move on.
God, you're so cocky.
This is going to be in three parts, guys. We're talking about embalming chemicals in three parts.
So the first one, which is tonight, is going to be centered around formaldehyde.
Because it's important.
Seems like a good place to start. So then that will be supported by two following episodes, which will be all the other things that you'd find in your arterial. Not going to divulge. Just in case. Yes, and your accessory fluids. So without further ado, Andy, let's start talking about formaldehyde.
Shall we?
Let's.
HCHO. That's how you write it in its linear form.
Yep. Shall we start with a bit of a history for people? We don't need to go crazy deep, do we?
Well, we can't go too far back because it was only... First produced when? Students, let's hear it. 1868.
But it was discovered in?
Was it 7 years before or 9 years before?
1859 it was discovered by Butler Roth.
How many years is that before 1868?
What are you doing? How much of that wine have you been drinking before we've done this?
Well, I've had two glasses.
Right, anyway. So I think that's a really interesting point. Not that you've had two glasses of wine.
We're not taught that here. We're not taught that in the UK.
So up until very, very recently, I didn't know Butler Roth existed.
Existed? Poor Alexander.
Let alone discovered it.
Didn't even get a look in. So, you gave Hoffman all that credit.
So before then... Andy, tell us, how did we preserve people?
Well, there were all sorts of different ways. You could go right back to the astringent way of preserving, which was salt-based. And of course, that we can relate back to the ancient Egyptians. That's a very ancient way, just withdrawing moisture and desiccating the body. And then hopping a little bit further forward in time, we could look at the use of the heavy metal salts. And we were talking your arsenic and things of that nature. Now that stopped it
not
around.
Not dangerous at all.
that stopped the practice for that. Actually, might surprise a lot of people. It was quite recent. It was 1906 when that last stopped, but that was forbidden then by law because they couldn't tell whether people were being poisoned or not. Alcohol has always had a place in preservation. Again, it's dehydrative by nature, but alcohol still plays a role in certain fluids for preservative demands. But it's certainly the advent of formaldehyde that was the game changer. It's the aldehydes that are the important preservatives nowadays. And I appreciate there's a lot of people out there that might be saying, oh, well, there's formaldehyde free and this, that, and the other. There are low formaldehyde. There are formaldehyde free alternatives. But what we'll soon discover is they're just not quite as effective.
You love formaldehyde, don't you, Andy?
I do love formaldehyde. HCHO, I love. I'm wearing the T-shirt. It's got I, then a red heart, HCHO.
Maybe we should add that to the, you know, when we start having, like, merch, we can have, like...
when we start having?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm surrounded by piles of it that you've convinced me to buy.
Notebooks, hoodies.
I'm here for books and T-shirts.
Coming out of your ears. Oh, dear.
Anyway, so, yes, that was just a little bit of a history of the previous preservatives used for embalming purposes.
And the, unlike what we thought, well, our curriculum, would you say? The
I would Hoffman. Say so, yeah, our syllabus. Yes.
That's a good word. You can tell you're a teacher. let's start at the beginning. Not the beginning.
Because it's a very good place to start.
You always say that, and I always say that, and it's so infuriating. So what is it? What is formaldehyde?
The gas, naturally.
You've got what?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a colourless gas.
It is. It's pungent.
It's pungent.
It's irritable.
Yeah, like you.
So don't get it mad. It deserves respect. I know it really does.
Well,
some people are more sensitive than others.
Yeah, some people are sensitive to even low-level formaldehyde, aren't they?
Exposure, yeah. But you should always protect yourself against any exposure. So just because you think you might not be sensitive to it, it's no reason not to wear the appropriate personal protective equipment and have the correct ventilation in the mortuary.
Yes. So... I can't take you seriously.
Stop laughing. Why?
It's because you've been very eyebrow-y.
Nobody else can see.
See.
This isn't a vidcast. This is
no,
a
thank God.
Podcast. Come on, get to it. Hey, do you want to know some other names for formaldehyde?
Go on.
Methanal. Methyl aldehyde. Methylene oxide. Formic aldehyde. And oxymethylene. They all mean the same thing.
So, well...
Google it.
Google it.
They all say, see, formaldehyde.
So, how does it work?
Needle pulling thread?
How does formaldehyde work? So, I suppose... So, formaldehyde achieves preservation, doesn't it? So, let's be really basic.
We need to understand how and why.
So, it achieves preservation by cross-linking at the peptide linkage.
Dun, wow, dun, dun. I love all of these words. So, I think the first...
Oh, go on. Oh,
hey,
go
what,
on.
Where, right. What we need to set is a baseline knowledge, okay? We need to understand three terms. Amino acids, peptides, and polypeptides. And then the next step up from a polypeptide is protein.
I really like the way you said polypeptide. You're very...
I love polypeptide. So it reminds me of a Pokemon. I think that was Poliwhirl.
I love it when you find a word that you enjoy.
Poly means many. Saying. Just means many. Many peptides. So amino acids are the basic building blocks of protein. when decomposition occurs and our body degrades, that's ultimately what we go back to before we go back to the elemental form. So it's the very smallest building block of a protein. So think of it like you're surrounded by Lego and you've got all your little blocks, and then you start to build your blocks into structures. Well, the very primitive form would be two or more amino acids, which would be a peptide. And then the more you start adding, the more complex a structure you make, that's a polypeptide, because it just means many peptides. Poly means many. So there are 20 essential amino acids in the human body for our normal physiological metabolism, growth, and what have you. There are 20. So you got 20 Lego bricks.
You're tempted to start listing them and going into them all, because I'm
going
to...
No, I'm not. I won't.
Remind you at this point that...
That's where I've got a line under. I've drawn a line at that. That's for another episode. But ultimately, what we need to understand about the amino acid is that it's organic. It's a natural compound, organic compound. And there are two groups, chemical groups associated with an amino acid. There's the amine group or the amino group, which is nitrogen, two hydrogens, and the carboxyl group, which is carbon, oxygen, oxygen, hydrogen. That's the carboxyl. So that is as simple as we need to make it. There are two groups associated with an amino acid. So what you should be able to bring to mind now is that if you start building from these amino acids more complex structures, you've just got many, many, many amino groups and many, many, many carboxyl groups.
Well, it's worth mentioning, isn't it, that the other terms that might be used to describe this is fixating, denaturing, and coagulating of a protein.
That's right. That would be what happens when the action of the preservative comes into contact with these particular structures, these protein structures.
Am I jumping ahead? Do you?
Just only a little bit. Only a little bit. No, that's good, because those three things all mean the same thing when it comes to the preservative action of formaldehyde on protein. But in ourselves, as physiological beings, every protein has a function, it has a role, it does something. So not only is it built up of a certain combination of these amino acids, but they're also folded and coiled in all weird and wonderful directions. But it has to be in that shape to perform its duty. That's how we utilize protein in our body. Or our cells make it. They constantly make it. In fact, we're making more than we normally do at the moment for anybody that's had the Moderna vaccine or anybody that's had the Pfizer, AstraZeneca, because you're making alien things now. You're making little spikes, extra proteins that you normally wouldn't. Anyway, that's going off topic. More about that later. So at the end of the day, we are making proteins. We've got these complex structures, which can be thousands of peptides in length, thousands of units, but all principally made of these 20 amino acids. Now, the important thing here is that they connect together. A peptide always connects with another peptide at a particular point. Okay? And where the amine group and the carboxyl group join, that's called the peptide bond or the linkage. And that's how you can have these structures form these complicated thousand unit structures. Okay.
And this is the point where formaldehyde
crosslinks. Yeah, this is the point where formaldehyde crosslinks, because what it does principally is formaldehyde causes, when it comes into exposure with these proteins, it causes them to unfold. So whereas they were a particular shape in life, it unfolds them now, which is why the word denature can be applied, because it's not natural, it's denatural. Yep. So now the formaldehyde is introducing itself at these points where the peptides would normally link together, and it's doing something quite amazing. It's using water, or it's generating, creating water as a way of holding the protein together. Crazy.
It's crazy. But, it is crazy. But that think it's water, about this. Isn't it? Like...
HCHO. Okay. The linear form of formaldehyde. So its O is the important thing here, because the O, the oxygen, always wants two hydrogens to create water. That's H2O. Okay. So what the oxygen does in the HCHO, when it gets to that particular connecting point, is it grabs an H from one protein and it grabs another H from another protein. And that's it. It's holding on to two proteins then. But suddenly, because you've got the...
I wish this was a vidcast.
I'm getting all animated.
He's
animated.
Holding on. He's holding on.
So the O has now grabbed hold of two H's, and that is your link. That's your cross link. So you've brought two proteins that wouldn't normally be attached together. Now, what should be mentioned here is that the nature of protein is to retain water. It's to retain and absorb water. So in this link being made, that brings the two proteins closer together. Okay. Now, just so that we don't, I fall into the danger of overcomplicating this, and I really don't want to, because I promise Rach that we'd try and keep this as simple as possible. But I'm hoping everybody's got this picture at the moment of what's going on.
What we'll do is we'll take a photo of you afterwards.
Yeah.
Doing your little actions.
What I want to do, though, is I want to try and put this into a context that people can appreciate, people can think about in everyday context. And everybody's familiar with an egg.
Are we going to boil an egg, Andy? Are we going to cook an egg, sorry?
We'll fry an egg.
Okay, we'll cook it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, boil it. That would work too. That's fine.
So long as we're heating it.
Anyway, keep on this egg. So the white of an egg, we can all appreciate, as soon as it leaves the shell, it's liquid, isn't it? Yeah, it's like a thick liquid, but it's still liquid. Now that's protein. It's called albuminous protein. And very similar to 60% of the protein that we have in our body.
So when we apply heat to this protein, we see it turn white and we see it start to solidify.
We do. And that's the key bit. That's the bit that I want people to just bring to mind and appreciate while I'm talking about this action of formaldehyde on protein, because it's the fact it will turn from a liquid
to
a semi-solid form, or what we could term a resin. Okay, so what that means when we talk about a resin being formed, and at this point, the resin has not yet been formed. It's at a halfway point, because at this point in my description of what's happening, we've just got the oxygen from the HCHO that's grabbed two hydrogens from the respective two different proteins. So it's formed a bridge, what's called a methylene bridge, and it's anchored these two proteins together. But that's not the end of the story. That's only the ability to bring the two proteins together. And it's a secure bond, but it's not a permanent fixed bond. In order for that bond to become a resin, so a strong bond, then the preservative kicks in which ultimately kicks the water out. So the preservative brings together the two proteins, almost fuses them together, and then the water leaves the reaction. So it served its purpose to form that link between the two groups, and then when the preservative action kicks in, that's when the water's gone. And that's why the action of formaldehyde on protein forming a resin is dehydrative in its action. Because ultimately because it doesn't instantly fix. When you put your arterial solution in contact with the protein, it doesn't instantly fix. You get that temporary cross-link occurring first, and then the preservative fixes or forces the two different proteins together into a resin. Now, the important thing to know about a resin is that now we no longer have formaldehyde, and we no longer have the protein.
And at this point, it also becomes safe, doesn't it?
It does. We've created now a new structure.
And the new compound that we've now formed then is the one that's stable but unfit as a food for microorganisms, which again feeds back to why it's...
I mean, you could, in a very loose fashion, say you've created a plastic. It isn't.
Yeah.
Not plastic as we know it, though formaldehyde does have a role in plastic production, a very large role in plastic production.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? Going back to the how it's used to form resins. So, for example, a plastic comb. So formaldehyde would be used in the production of in the manufacture of making that, and then that hard resin then links back to being safe because. Although we wouldn't put formaldehyde in our mouth, we could put the resin, which is the comb, in our mouth.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's a good analogy to bring in. But I think ultimately what we're saying is that once the formaldehyde has served its purpose, it's no longer formaldehyde.
And also don't put dead people in your mouth.
Well, no, that's quite a sensible thing not to do. but the principle is that, you know, what... A lot of people will try to argue is a very dangerous substance actually ceases to be that substance when it's done its job.
Yeah.
So people that are concerned that a deceased person, say, is buried with X amount of
formaldehyde
within them because of the arterial solution that's been injected into the deceased... But even in that context, the final percentage concentration of formaldehyde is very low.
And well, we go into that quite a lot of detail in our episode. I can't remember what number. No, but one that we've already done. What was it? Embalming the environment.
Oh, that was drinking grandma.
Yes,
that's right. Yeah.
So we went into how this is a very real thing that people believe. And one of the reasons why formaldehyde is quite deeply villainized. I know we're going to come to this later towards the end of this episode, but again, it's really not known, is it, that it is organic and that it can be broken down?
It is known, but I think it's what people choose to divulge and what their agenda is when they're trying to talk about formaldehyde, unfortunately. There are a lot of people that, for whatever reason, want to villainize it. And I know we're going to talk about that later on. But ultimately, there is a reason why, since its first production by von Hofmann in 1868, it has remained unsurpassed as an effective, affordable preservative. And we were talking about it, of course, from our perspective as preservation of human tissue and as an embalmers. But of course, you know, this product has been used every day in every hospital. This is the essence of how your biopsy specimens and your surgical specimens that you've had taken for analysis, how it's preserved.
Yeah.
You know, this fantastic compound is just, it revolutionized the way we live. And, you know, it's what it does for the greater good.
Yeah, the
is so often dismissed
the advantages far outweigh the disadvantages.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just become synonymous with death, unfortunately, because of its use within our circles as a preservative. But a fantastic, demands respect, does formaldehyde. I'm one of its biggest advocates. So
I feel like I might have sent us slightly off course then. Was it me?
Did you? I don't know. I think I was, when we were talking about its action, I think I finished, didn't I, by saying ultimately the water that was created to link the two proteins was removed to get that insoluble resin.
Yeah.
And that's why when a deceased person is embalmed, the tissue takes on almost a firm feel. It has... what's the word I'm looking for? It has a texture. It has almost a rubbery type texture. I'm mindful that people will be listening that aren't within the profession, so I don't want to, you know, make people upset by that or concerned about that. But it just gives almost a feel of confidence that that tissue's not going to degenerate anytime soon.
As someone who used the low formaldehyde products for quite some time up until recently, the texture of the higher indexes is one of the things that I don't like as a personal preference. Right. So although when I was newly qualified, I liked it because it was a very good indication and an easy indication for me to know that all my tissues were
had been saturated
and that person was well embalmed. And when you move away from using those kind of solutions, it's weird is the only way I can describe it at first, because what you associate with well embalmed tissue and what you go to as an indication, once that's reduced or removed, it is quite unusual. But as someone who's used high formaldehyde, then gone to low, and then come back up again now to high, I've realised that that's actually something I don't like about.
Yeah, there are two things in that though. I mean, obviously, we both have, you know, very different views on this, and
yes, we do.
You know, and that's good. I mean, that's what a debate's about, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I fully appreciate, you know, your standpoint that if you can have a solution that can be used that can affect a certain amount of preservation but not have that firm feel, you've got to ask yourself, well, how much preservation is actually really happening then?
But this is where I'm willing to accept that I am not preserving.
Yes.
For anything past, I would argue, 10 days.
Okay.
So my order of, so I would not use this on every case because if I want preservation, formaldehyde is 100% what I want.
Yeah.
Whereas day to day, well, not at the minute, but what I prioritized first was the presentation of the person and getting a lifelike appearance, color, including the texture side, then the preservation and sanitation were lower down my list in terms of what I was looking for long term.
Yeah, I think what I just wanted to make clear to everybody was the fact that yes, low formaldehyde fluids do exist. Even formaldehyde free fluids do exist, but I think they need to be put into the right context. And people have to understand that if it's low formaldehyde, then it has a low preservation quality to it. Yes, that there are other chemicals that can be used as formaldehyde substitutes in terms of preservation. But in using things like alcohol and salts, we're going back to a primitive time before the discovery of formaldehyde. So it might take away those telltale signs of firmness, but it's also going to take away the preservative demand that you're looking for. But that is
really important to understand. See, I go into it.
I just wouldn't want somebody going in to use this thinking, oh, this is great, fantastic. You know, they can be supple, they can be pliable.
See, I'm fortunate as well in the fact that in my role, I do embalm for multiple funeral homes, but the funeral homes that I have access to, I visit regularly. So when I use these fluids, I'm not then never going to see that person again. So they remain within my care until the day of the funeral. So I would not be comfortable personally if I was embalming them and then thinking, right, well, they're going to just not need anything else ever. You've got to understand the limitations of the fluids before you use them. I would argue.
And I think that's true of any fluid, you know, accessory fluids, other types of fluids that we'll move on to talk about in the following episodes,
not this one. Because edema fluids are going to be a perfect example of that, aren't they?
Indeed. I think just to have this ability to listen to something like this and just to get a different perspective really on what you thought you knew about the action of fluids and how things work, it's a good thing. You know, it just broadens your horizons and it makes you understand what you're using and why it's working the way it is.
Well, I find that just our conversation, so the other night when we were on the phone for an hour just chatting, and I left that conversation.
Oh, is that when I put the phone on the side and I was doing something else and then I came back and said,
actually, what are you on about? I was the one that would have put the phone down. I think everyone who listens to these podcasts realise I do not get a word in edgeways because you do not shut up. So
it's all right, I'm having a drink of wine now. Talk away.
So if anyone was putting the phone on the side, it'd be me. But anyway, I've forgotten you. See, you've thrown me off now. I'm having a sulk.
You don't know what you were going to say now, do you? Anyway.
Anyway.
Go on. Did it come to you? Get it out now or you'll forget again.
No, it was just when we were talking about humectants. And I literally went to work the following day and read a bottle. Because I was like,
Don't spoil that surprise.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
That's going to come later on into the other episode.
That was just us chatting. Yeah. And especially like with social media platforms and conversations and seeing things thrown up that really make you think, tampon get removed tampons from deceased. But anyway, we're digressing.
We had that conversation going on. You know, it was my first Starbucks of the morning and I just had this message saying, do you remove tampons? I thought, well, not personally, no.
Anyway, watch our vidcast for that because we'll have to
we're not doing a demonstration.
No, but we're going to have to go into more information about it because we can't just leave it hanging like that.
That's true. Hanging. By a thread.
Okay, so I'm conscious that let's have a break.
I've not even started.
Andy. Right. We're going to have a quick break and then we will be back. So speak to you soon. Did you know you can find The Eternal Debate on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter?
Be sure to follow us to keep up to date with future episodes or even suggest future topics.
And share us with people who you think might enjoy our content. Welcome back. So before the break, don't look at me like that, Andy. Before the break, I mentioned, well, I feel like I said low formaldehyde fluids. Andy claims that I said low index.
She said index.
I don't think
rewind
I did.
It, folks.
I don't think I did.
She said index. She promised me she wouldn't. She did.
This is like when you accused me of swearing. I'm almost sure of it. But anyway.
You'd swear. It was just at a low volume and nobody else picked up on it.
Right.
But this was a high volume and you definitely said index.
I don't think I did. But anyway, right.
And we need to explain what index means.
Index only refers.
People know what index means because they've listened to the equation. Episode one.
Stop talking over me. Index only refers to the amount of formaldehyde gas present. So, should we give the example?
I think we should. So practicing embalmers are going to be familiar with a percentage value associated with any bottle of arterial fluid that contains formaldehyde.
So if the bottle, for example, says 30 index, what that would actually mean is there is...
It's a nice peach colour.
30 grams. Shut up. Sorry. Why did you do that?
I know, I don't know.
You're the one that's always paranoid about not giving
away...
Come on,
get back on track.
Right, so 30 grams of formaldehyde gas per 100
millilitres. Yeah.
Right, cool. I'm sure I still
is that set.
Yeah. So does
are we straight with that?
Does everyone
give
know?
Another example?
Does everyone stop it? Right.
So if I've got an 18 index fluid, and I measure 100 mils of this 18 index fluid,
you've got 18.
How many grams of formaldehyde gas would I have on my
18?
I was going to say spoon, but I don't think you'd fit that on a spoon.
Right. So
18 grams. Good.
Right, so we've covered index. So now seems like a good time to continue with percentages. So should we discuss...
No, before we do that, you also mentioned in your last, before the break, rant, that until recently you were using low...
Yes.
...index formaldehyde products.
So...
Why until recently?
Because of the disinfecting aspect of formaldehyde. So obviously we are in the middle of a global pandemic and
crisis.
This is exactly why we are currently on
I might
Zoom.
Have been too loud for Si.
I know you're going to I feel like you're going to get done.
Will I be in
you're,
trouble now because
you're going to get done for that. I'm going to get done for the fact that this episode's gone on longer than we said it would. Anyway,
protein is not just about us.
You've thrown me again.
No, what? Protein's present in bacteria.
Oh, so we're talking about why I said up until recently. So up until recently, we need the higher index. We need the security that formaldehyde affords us.
Oh, I can sleep with my comfort blanket now, knowing that you're using proper formaldehyde fluids.
But yeah, because the situation requires it, doesn't it?
Indeed,
it does. I am not anti-formaldehyde.
Wonderful. And, I know. I know.
I respect it, and I understand. Well, I do still use it on cases. Yeah,
but I think
even
for everyone else listening, it's important to know that even though we use it principally as a preservative, it's a perfectly good disinfectant.
Yeah.
Because the definition of a disinfectant is a chemical that acts on a particular microorganism to remove its ability to infect.
Which...
Or cause harm.
And we're obviously going to come to this because we're going to do a little advantages, disadvantages towards the end anyway, aren't we? So,
yep. Bacteria contains protein, so do viruses. That's what makes it topical. They wear protein coats. But the same principle applies, the same method of action applies. So that's how disinfection and preservation is achieved.
So now...
And... when a person is... she's showing me the time now. We're nearly at 40 minutes. I'm under strict instructions to not waffle. I do think this is important, that when a person is decomposing, there are organelles or little structures within the cells that contain enzymes... which have the ability
to
dissolve.
We're talking about this in the advantages.
Oh.
Stop it.
Sorry. Right, come on, move on.
Right, index. Back to index. So we
finished on index.
Yes, but now we need to talk about formalin, formaldehyde.
Oh, yeah, formalin.
Thank you. Ugh,
right, okay, come on. This is, no good comes of being organised. I'm sorry. This was the first attempt, wasn't it, to try and be organized. Yeah.
What it is, Andy, is we're not capable of staying on track.
Come on, lead the way, Jose.
We talk about other things. Right, so formaldehyde.
Yes. Formalin.
generally
what's the difference? Formaldehyde, formalin, tomatoes, tomatoes.
Formaldehyde is a gas.
It is.
Formalin is an aqueous solution.
Well, formaldehyde in an aqueous solution
is formalin.
Well, no, formalin. Actually, formalin, technically speaking, is a trade name.
Oh, is it? I genuinely didn't know that.
Yeah, it is. It's a trade name, but it's also used to refer to formaldehyde at its highest possible percentage or index.
So, which is 37% in water.
Accepted as 37% when the dilute is water.
What about alcohol, Andy?
Ah, well, if it's alcohol, then it can be upwards of 50%.
Oh, I feel like I'm losing my mind tonight.
I feel like I'm losing my mind. Did you say we had to do a TikTok, by the way?
Why have you put that in there?
Because anybody that was listening to me just doing that song then, which I thought I replicated very well, is quite a topical TikTok song at the moment.
Well, I don't have TikTok, so I wouldn't know.
No, but we've got to get in. Come on, this is about preservatives. We can't just be talking about TikTok to suit your needs. Right. 37% by weight is the maximum that you can have formaldehyde in solution, which is called formalin. And that's when the solution is water-based. Here's the thing. When formaldehyde is water-based, it's actually called methylene glycol. And that's important because that helps to form that methylene bridge that we talked about earlier in bringing the two proteins together. So, just to clarify that, 37% is the highest index you can have. Because what happens if we go beyond 37% formaldehyde or formalin by weight in a water-based solution?
Are you genuinely asking me?
I'm asking you.
All right. Well, in case it precipitates?
Perfect, because it'll precipitate.
Do I get a gold star?
Yep. I've just stuck it on my computer screen right on your forehead.
I genuinely thought, like, because you were looking at me like, but I weren't sure if you were doing that thing where you're asking a question rhetorically,
I was bringing you in.
Oh, I thank you for including me in our podcast. That's
you're more than
kind.
Welcome. More than welcome. I see. I do nice things from time to time.
But it will precipitate. So, out of curiosity,
what does precipitate mean?
Andy, out of curiosity, what's the highest index you've used concentrated solution that you know of?
At 36%.
Right. Okay.
Which was.
I can't say names. Yeah. I feel like it's the same
well,
one
I will
as
say,
me, but is it not 35%?
Well, no, it does say on the bottle 36. I've checked.
Does it?
Yeah.
Does it?
It's in the name and it does say 36 on the bottle as well.
So we may as well have just said what it was.
But what I will say
is Andy's got a goldfish.
To advocate, this is my very first, it was a fancy goldfish called Daniel. Mm-hmm. And it was 2000 and it would have been 15 when Daniel died. And I put him into a little jam jar. I've done the side of the cross as well. Thanks for that. Thanks for your compassion there. So Daniel went into a little jam jar with this 36 index water-based formaldehyde solution. And he's submerged. Looking as good as the day he died.
I can vouch for that. Or he was last time.
It's
been like a year since I've been to...
Yeah. Well, it's been 5 years since Daniel died. We're in the sixth year now.
So let's move on then. Back to what we were doing. So alcohol, we've discussed water, haven't we? So if alcohol's in the solution, Andy?
If alcohol is the solvent, so if your formaldehyde gas is dissolved in alcohol, then you can reach higher indexes. You can reach indexes upwards of 50, which makes for a very, very strong solution.
And what does it max out at, roughly? Do we know?
I don't know, actually. I think it's from
70.
I think I did read that somewhere, 50 to 70.
I feel like that is
Yeah, sounds good anyway, so let's go with it. Who's going to argue?
And also we'll just put in...
We'll just look out for it in the comment section. If anybody does know. But then there is a situation where you can have a product which is nearly, or it can be anywhere from 80 to 99% concentrated formaldehyde. What is that product?
I feel like I'm scared of saying brand names.
No, don't say brand names.
The precipitate.
The precipitate form of formaldehyde.
Yeah.
So, paraformaldehyde.
I weren't sure if I was allowed to say
paraformaldehyde. It's not a brand name. That's just what it is. Para.
I panicked. I was like, yeah.
Oh, you would have had a solicitor's letter through the door tomorrow. No, para means around and formaldehyde. So the precipitate of formaldehyde, when it goes beyond the index that it can sustain in whatever its solvent medium is, when it precipitates, it turns into a powder and it settles as a sediment at the bottom. And then there are chemical companies that will harvest that sediment and use that for its topical ability to be sprinkled. And it's still a very effective preservative compound.
Well,
I wasn't sure whether you were looking at me in amazement there or just aghast.
No, I was just losing the will, clearly. This has to have been, considering we put so much effort into saying we were going to be really on it with this one, I feel like this has been...
Well, I think, do you know what I think it is? It's been ages since we've done it.
Yeah, it has been it.
And we're just so glad to be back together.
Okay. Right, so...
Because obviously you did next to nothing in the shanty, so, you know, it's about time you contributed.
I can't sing. Don't try to make
yeah,
me sing.
Yeah, yeah.
Shall we just, let's just have a little break here.
Well, everybody's enjoying this, so come on, let's just keep then, going.
No, we're going to have a little break, and then when we come back, we'll just...
We had a break before. How many breaks are we having?
Well, we're supposed to have two, and I'm just conscious that time's getting on a bit. So let's let people go and be like...
Well, this is our second break. If we were supposed to have two, that's a good thing.
Exactly, so stop and let's have a break. And then when we come back, we'll...
We're having a break.
We'll talk advantages and disadvantages.
We're breaking up.
Okay, bye. You can find all of our episodes at theeternaldebate.com.
Or you could subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcast, all major podcast platforms, and don't forget to leave us a review.
Welcome back.
We are back.
We've got a grip of ourselves. So, straight in, disadvantages of formaldehyde. Oh.
That's a low key to come back in.
I know, but we're going to bring it back up, aren't we? So, the disadvantages of formaldehyde, we're discussing this from an embalmer-specific point of view.
Yeah, we said at the beginning, didn't we, that people have different sensitivities to it. But regardless of sensitivity, you know, it is an irritant.
Yes.
It is not a pleasant substance to be involved with. You know, it demands respect. If you want it to work well for you, then you've got to make sure that you work well with it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, providing you both respect one another, I'm talking about it like it's your best friend, then all will be good. So, yeah, of course, we've got to put that under the disadvantages side, don't we? Operators' safety.
And whilst on that topic, I think we do need to mention that it is a suspected carcinogen.
Glad you said that word, because indeed suspected. Yes.
And the only reason I said suspected is because the amount of times we have had this conversation and I have not said suspected.
It is a known rodent carcinogen.
So
it is a known mutagen.
From the actual more embalming topical than disadvantages.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we do need to mention that we're talking about it as formaldehyde in the sense that this is why in an arterial there are other ingredients, and this is why we have things such as co-injection in chemicals. Co-injection chemicals. Did I say that right?
Correct. That's right. Things that you put in with the arterial solution.
But because of what we're about to discuss in terms of, so it does rapidly coagulate the blood within the blood vessels.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it will do. Well,
I don't know why that was blood vessel. vessels. So yeah,
I think we talked about that in a previous episode, didn't we? Methyl hemoglobin is what can contribute to the greying off.
Yes, so the greying. Yeah,
and that's a danger that is very much associated with anybody embalming and not affecting venous drainage.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we did talk about it in episode 3, vein drainage.
Ah, perfect.
We did talk about the grey.
Because, you know, blood is protein-based, and formaldehyde's not fussy. So you put it in contact with protein, and as we described at the very beginning, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Rapidly coagulates blood. Methyl hemoglobin can be the outcome.
Is the formaldehyde grey.
Yeah.
It fixes some discoloration, so bruising.
Yeah, so ecchymosis or bruising.
It fixes that.
Which is an extravascular loss of blood. That can be fixed into the tissue. And of course, a bruise would, in a living person, go through different stages of deterioration before being cleaned up from, you know, from the tissue by the body. That's not going to happen in death. Therefore, the formaldehyde, once it penetrates the tissue, will fix that discoloration in place. And it won't just fix it as it looks. It will darken the... Yeah,
so the greying that works...
Well, it'll cause the methyl hemoglobin to occur, basically. So
yeah, and they can, it can look quite...
It would require cosmetic treatment, yeah.
Yeah.
Tissue would be fixed well, but it would still be unsightly.
Yeah.
It dehydrates the tissue. I mean, we've got to put that under the disadvantages side.
I feel like we've briefly mentioned this in this episode.
No, we did. We did. Because the action of creating that insoluble resin is to remove the water that was part of that bridge that brought the two proteins together. So naturally, formaldehyde by its very action is going to dehydrate.
It's going to dehydrate the tissue.
We've got to say it's a disadvantage because ultimately it's a step away from a normal physiological look, isn't it?
And it is a disadvantage. One that, again, we can.
It's not insurmountable because we can add other chemicals to support its action and retain the.
Which is again when in future episodes where we're going to discuss about humectants.
Indeed.
And we do also then need to talk about that it can deteriorate with age and
it has to be specially formulated, doesn't it?
It's got to formic acid.
Mm-hmm. It can. if left in a high alkaline environment over a long period of time, then it will degenerate.
And again, so the alkaline environment, so the pH, again, is going to be something that we're going to come to.
But is that necessarily a disadvantage? Because over time, that could be looked upon as being quite a natural thing to happen.
Yeah.
And an environmentally acceptable or friendly thing.
From purely a preservation point of view, though.
Yes, we are. Yeah.
But
I mean, fortunately, our preservation tends to be 2 to 3 weeks, doesn't it? But I mean, obviously, exceptions to that occur. But on the whole,
yeah,
that tends to be the time limit we're working towards.
So, shall we talk the advantages?
Yay! Advantages of formaldehyde.
Andy's favourite.
100% organic.
And I genuinely think that that's quite something that people won't realise. That it's 100% organic.
Because they don't like to attribute friendly words
to
formaldehyde.
And
anything else, if you said it was organic, everybody would rush out, they'd buy it.
They'd want
formaldehyde.
It.
Nobody wants to know. Don't try and make it sound good, whatever you do.
So yeah, it's organic. Oh, I've just clicked that. I'm gonna get done.
Can be broken down by sunlight.
Yes, and in the soil. broken
and
down
in the soil.
By bacteria.
Especially if it's alkaline soil.
Yeah, so again, the whole, I suppose we're de-villainizing it by default now, aren't we? In the one of the things
I didn't villainize it to begin with.
Well, no, you didn't, but people do. So when we're talking about it in a bad
who are people
light,
and why are they doing it?
Well, it's always touted that it's in groundwater from cemeteries and there's enough formaldehyde in X amount of soil to kill 1,000 people. I don't know.
That was drinking grandma, wasn't it?
I can't remember what
it
was.
That's when we picked apart that paper.
That paper. But again,
it was clutching at a few straws.
But, you know, this by default is de-villainizing that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Because it is organic,
so
it's, and it
naturally can be broken down in sunlight. So if anybody does have arterial fluids on a shelf, please don't put them by a window that has sunshine in on it, because they might not be as effective as you thought they were going to be down the line. Because, of course, they should be kept in a lockable metal cupboard.
So it's inexpensive. We've discussed that at the beginning of this episode, haven't we?
It's cheap, yeah.
It is cheap.
People love cheap. If something's good and it's cheap, we love it.
It's bactericidal. It inhibits yeast growth, mold.
Yes, it does, yeah. Mold and yeast growth. It's a natural inhibitor of that.
And now, Andy,
kills bacteria. Mm-hmm.
Would you like now to talk about its destructive actions, which...
Oh, it's disinfect.
You tried talking about it before and I shouted at you. So.
Yeah, you shouted me down, didn't you? No, I just wanted to make the point that it's not discriminatory about what it fixes. If it's protein, it will fix it, which is great. It'll cross-link it. And bacteria are protein-based organisms. Of course, our tissue, protein-based. And viruses often, not all, but often wear protein coats. And hey, some have protein S spikes. So isn't it great that formaldehyde will absolutely disinfect all protein material? That should give us a confidence that it's doing a good thing for us. And that's for the sanitation part, isn't it, of embalming. So preservation, presentation, sanitation. The threefold approach. It also, as I was going on to say, I think before I got shut down earlier.
This is...
The decomposing body releases from its cells digestive enzymes. They are proteolytic or hydrolytic enzymes. That means they are water-based, but they have the ability to destroy and dissolve proteins. Now, that fundamentally is what causes us to get to a more advanced stage of decomposition. It is the very beginning of decomposition in that we self-digest ourselves before any bacteria moves in to carry on the process. So ideally for an embalmer, the sooner we can be in a position to embalm a body, the more chance we will have of, you know, doing a most effective job. And that's because if we can introduce the formaldehyde gas to these organelles, which are called lysosomes within the cells, and we can fix the membrane that encapsulates these digestive enzymes, then A, we can stop the enzymes being released, and B, for any enzymes that have already been released, guess what? Enzymes are mostly protein-based. Formaldehyde doesn't care what it fixes. So if you've got these digestive enzymes knocking around that have been released from these little sacs, then formaldehyde is still going to be your best friend and stop them from reducing the body any further. I think that finished what I was saying before.
It did. I'm sorry. I feel like I really shouted you down earlier when you started doing that.
You did. I was very upset, actually.
Yeah. It was very aggressive.
There were many emojis that came to my mind when you did that.
I can only apologise.
A big long line of them.
So Let's just quickly end then with...
Quickly end? No, we shouldn't quickly end.
Let's talk about why formaldehyde has so many negative connotations. So the first thing that springs to my mind, even though I do not smoke, is cigarette packets.
Mm.
Contain formaldehyde.
Yeah. And you know, the formaldehyde that's contained within cigarettes it's such a low concentration that it might not as well be there. It's negligible. Mm. So I'm going to stick my neck out on the line and saying formaldehyde has almost and probably zero negative impact on smokers. But but the reason they highlight it is because it's associated with death.
Mm.
So to the general public, people do tend to think formaldehyde embalming death.
Yeah.
And that is the parallel that they're trying to draw. That is why they're focusing you in on the fact it is an ingredient. But, you know, when you sit down on your sofa at home, you don't see that same warning saying contains formaldehyde, do
when
you?
When you're cooking your sprouts.
Which sprouts,
for
yes.
For Christmas dinner.
Broccoli, sprouts.
Yeah.
Very definitely contain formaldehyde. Or release formaldehyde, I should say, when they're cooked. Mm. They do. When you have a storm and you go out to your front doorstep to watch the lightning, you don't suddenly scream because it's lightninged and then scream again because formaldehyde's been released into the air.
Our,
I don't think
us our
and it's, our bodies naturally
our bodies
produce it.
Produce formaldehyde mm-hmm. Through metabolism, don't they? So
So I think what we're making very clear here is formaldehyde is as natural a product as
And this is the thing that always baffles me when people seem to assume that just because something's natural, something's good as well. Not meaning formaldehyde, but everything has its place, doesn't it? So although I wouldn't...
Everything deserves respect in its own right.
So I'm not going to go, oh yeah, I'm going to drink it, because obviously, no.
That's not.
It's not the same as eating a sprout, is it? But because again, anti-vaxxers, very topical at the moment with the COVID-19 vaccination rollout. And
well, there are three, aren't there? Three vaccines. Mm. Well, there are more than three now, aren't there? But I think there are three that are mainstream in the news. The Moderna, the Pfizer, AstraZeneca, and the Oxford. What's the Oxford one?
Yeah, Oxford and AstraZeneca are the...
Is that the one together? Yeah. What's the Pfizer one? Pfizer something?
Pfizer's the American...
Yeah, but... Oh, anyway, I'm taking Madeira? Too much time.
Madeira?
No, there's Moderna, Pfizer, and the Oxford AstraZeneca. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, again, we could go on a tangent on this. But ultimately, the essence of a vaccine generally is to give you an attenuated form of the thing that you want to create a protection against. Now, of those three vaccines, only the Oxford one does that, works in that way. So if you receive the Oxford one, you are being given an attenuated form of the coronavirus, which I believe is from simian origin. I think it's from a monkey.
Regards to the formaldehyde, then?
So the chances are, now I've got to say, I don't know, I've not looked into this, I've not read the papers, but I assume that that virus was formaldehyde fixed. Because by doing that, it disinfects it, it makes it unable to carry out its normal life processes, but the key thing is it doesn't change its look or its structural form.
So the body can recognize.
So it binds it into a resin. So basically you've created a model of it. It was the original thing and it's been attenuated, which means it can't do anything that it would normally do. So it can't harm you. But when it goes into your body immediately reacts by thinking, ooh, look, that doesn't look good. And then you start to generate the antibodies against it. And but I'm only being topical using that Oxford example.
Yeah, as an example.
But any other vaccine that introduces an attenuated form of the antigen, either a part of it or in its entirety, into your body, is generally formal enough formaldehyde fixed.
But yeah, the anti-vax movement really hones in on the fact that you're being injected with formaldehyde.
But again, it's so only again, because it's of the negative connotations. Yeah,
the connotations of formaldehyde.
They want you to think formaldehyde's evil, therefore the thing it's associated with is evil.
Yeah.
So God help anybody if they ever button up a cardigan again. Cardigan's evil!
Don't comb your hair.
Formaldehyde in buttons.
Get off your sofa.
Combs, evil!
Do not
formaldehyde in combs.
Do not cook those sprouts on Christmas Day.
Evil! Oh, some people might agree that sprouts are evil.
I do.
I like them.
No.
No, I do like them.
Anyway, so... that was our episode on formaldehyde.
I think we bounced around a bit.
We did. But that is our nature and we can't help ourselves.
Well, we probably could. But, you know, where would the fun be?
Although we want these to be educational.
We got all the information in.
Yeah, well, we want it to be educational, but also, like, you're not in school. You're not... And some people just learn better about
it. Yeah, you want a boring lecture? Look it up on YouTube. And you probably still won't find one on this subject.
Attend Andy's college.
How very dare you. How very dare you. Our students are all used to the songs and dances that come as part of imparting knowledge. This won't come as any surprise to them.
So
right, well, that was the first part of a trilogy that's probably going to go on beyond three, but no, it won't. We'll make sure that we
we'll condense
the rest.
Okay, yeah. So thank you for
without further ado,
always dropping our comments or DMs if you'd like to give us any
get the danger mouses in,
and we will speak to you very soon.
Until next time.
Bye.